I'd like to thank the organizers for this very wonderful conference and inviting me to give a talk. And I'd like to focus on this quantum integrability of ADS4 and CFT3 correspondence, where we have managed to find the very positive and the concrete the evidence for integrability to all orders in perturbation theory starting from the conformal field theory side. And this is in collaboration with my two brilliant collaborators, Dong-Soo Park and Hyun-Soo Min, both in Korea. And I'm very particularly proud of that. This is a product of Korea. And the main result I want to let you bring home is that, first of all, the Magnon spectrum that we study in this system is predicted by integrability and the excitation symmetry, the PSU2/2, in the numerous works during the last several months. And it fits very well. I'd like to show that it fits very well with the conformal field theory, perturbation theory computations based on ABJM theory, which we heard early in this morning. And I will show you very concrete up to 6 loops and also the argument which goes all loops in perturbation theory. And this, I think, is very conclusive result. And I will tell you why we go up to 6 loops in explicit computation. There is a good rational and reason rather than jumping on 48 loops. And then there's another issue, which I think is more general than just ADS4, CFT3, which is the issue of symmetry consideration. So in all the spin chain, the ADS string dualities, we have studied both in ADS5 and ADS4, it is exclusively assumed that the momentum is lattice momentum made out of the Young-Mills words, Young-Mills letters and the words. But I'd like to point out that it is actually possible to consider more general lattice structure or pseudo momentum rather than lattice momentum, which fits very well with all the symmetries of the system. And it is a question that we want to address, whether this pseudo momentum is actually realized in any spin chain systems. Okay, let me just, because we have not heard much of the supergravity side or string theory side of this ADS4 CFT3 correspondence, let me spare a couple of minutes of recapitulating the salient features of ADS4 CFT3. What is the feature of this ADS4 CFT3? After all, we have studied ADS5 and Ennikov Super Young-Mill correspondence, especially integrability, for the last 5 years to death. And why do you want to add one more? Well, from integrability point of view, especially those who just want to jump on to in the spin chain Hamiltonian and solve the spectrum, there's nothing new. There's absolutely nothing you can learn. But from string theory point of view, it's completely new. And I want to make a couple of emphases on that point. So as you all know, type 2B on ADS5 to S5, that is holographical dual to four-dimensional N=4 super Young-Mill theory. So this is the system we know very well, and the reason why we love it so much because we know the fundamental Lagrangian of string theory as well as the supergravity on this background. And at the same time, on dual side, we have microscopic Lagrangian description of N=4 super Young-Mill theory. And that's a very unique feature of this system. Now, once you have this example from string theory point of view, once you have this kind of example in type 2B side, and recording the fact that we have also type 2A string or more unifying M theory side, you may ask a very natural question even before the ABJM has advanced. Namely, what would be the counterpart of this type 2B stories in type 2A or M theory? We know that string theory is completely different to type 2A side or even in M theory side. Therefore, the whole reason why we study integrability is to understand string theory, not just the integrability. Therefore, we should be able to understand some mysteries of M theory or type 2A theory by, again, indulging integrability structure in this system. So here, the example, the proposal that has been put forward by ABJM is that we are studying M theory on ADS four times, S7MAZK ovifold. This ovifold is a very peculiar ovifold compared to the familiar type 2B ovifold. And at the same time, by Kaluza-Kron reduction, we are studying type 2A string theory on ADS 4 times CP3. And this is, as we are now already heard this morning, is dual to three-dimensional N equals 6 super Chan-Simon theory known as ABJM theory. Actually, there is another version, which is ABJ, which is not discussed in the earlier talk, which is actually generalizing all this one. In a minute, I will go through the different details of difference. Here, I want to emphasize one single unique feature of this system as opposed to ADS5 times S5. Here, if you have studied this system, also in integrability, a little more, then you have a very dandy way of reducing supersymmetry from n equal 4 to down to n equal 2 or 1 or even 0. The simplest tool available is what is known as orbifolding. The orbifolding internal S5 by appropriate discrete subgroup of the S5, the symmetry, isometry, you will get the orbifoldized theory, which is known as a Kreber gauge theory. And they share many features, at least in large and planar limit. And there are some features which has not been understood so far, and that still, everything still is describable in terms of this 10-dimensional ADS5 and S5 geometry. Here is totally different. So here I want to recollect what this ZK orbifolding is in S7 in M theory. So you start with the S7. The elementary fact is S7 is U15 version of a CP3. And as you know, the CP3 has CP1 inside, which is also varying in size. Now, this is all described in covering spaces C4. Okay? Now, this S1 is isometry direction. Now, we would like to take orbifolding along that isometry direction and then dimension reduce along that S1. That's the way we reduce 11-dimensional M theory down to 10 dimension. Now, notice this one. By going down to 10-dimensional string theory rather than M theory, now you have completely put this S1 to oblivion. In other words, this is in M theory circles, so you cannot see it from string theory point of view. So after the type 2A reduction, the space-time what you have in internal space is CP3, but this S1 or S1 ma ZK orbifold is completely gone out of your 10-dimensional space-time. So this is completely different from type 2B orbifolding procedure. So the big question, which is not necessarily related to the integrability in this system from string theory point of view, is understanding or picking any remnant or signature of this S1 which lives in 11-dimensional M theory directions. Okay? So this is a completely new feature, and this is not the only one. Now, I want to, because you're all familiar with ADS5 times S5, I want to here make a parallel dictionary between the two sides such that you get familiar with this type 2A side. So in ABJM theory, we have seen the Lagrangian in a previous talk. It has coupling parameter K, which is known as Chan-Simon coefficient. That takes integer value, but we are taking K very large, perturbative limit, and then 1 over K is small expansion parameter. This is counterpart of the Young-Mills coupling constant. Here, for those who knows the two-node Kreber orbifolding down to N equal 2 super Young-Mill, I just made a parallel that in that case there are the gauge coupling constant, G Young-Mill 1 and G Young-Mill, to associate with two gauge groups, UN1 and UN and UN. Now here, if you consider ABJ theory or ABJM, in this case is a special case, is that there are two gauge groups, direct product, their rank is M and N. On the other hand, in N equal 4 super Young-Mill theory size, it's simply N. Okay, N is fixed even though you have an orbifoldized theory. Okay? Now then, the scaling limit we are taking in this theory is usual, the truth limit that the fixed coupling parameter is lambda. In this case, in the N equal 4 super Young-Mill case, it's G square N, the same for N equal 2 orbifold theory. In this case, is M over K or N over K. Now notice that the two varying parameters in ADS5 side, ADS5 and ADS4 side is different. Here, the analog of the G Young-Mill coupling constant fixed, but rank of the gauge group is changed. That's one variable you can take. But in the N equal 2 super Young Mill theory side, the one parameter deformation you can make is that you make the theory asymmetric such that coupling parameters of two direct product gauge group is different. So correspondingly in N equal, the ADS5 side, there are two of the coupling parameter where rank of the gauge group is same, but coupling constant is different. In ADS4 side, one over K is the same, but rank of the gauge group is different. This is another difference. So how does that, okay, so like N equal 4 super Young Mill and ADS5, string theory is double expansion in two parameter, one over N, two of the coupling parameter, lambda, or equivalent in gravity side, G string and the alpha prime expansion. Now how does those, how do those parameters appear in type 2A side? Here, as I said, we have CP3, which is reduced from S7 by overfolding, and inside we have the string, the two cycle, the P1, and this P1 plays a very important role because on top of the four form flux you can turn on, which is roughly proportional to N, which is the rank of the Chern-Simon gauge group, you can also turn on the two form flux along these two cycles, and that is parameter K. And that has to be quantized by the usual direct quantization condition. And there's one more parameter. This B2 is what is known as NS-NS2 form potential, not the field strength. And that can be turned on along these two cycles. And that is, the coefficient is parameterized as M minus N divided by K, where M and N are these two different gauge groups in ABJ theory psi. Okay? And G-string is, of course, 1 over N. Let's compare this with N equal 2 Kuiper gauge theory in ADS5 times S5 case. In that case, there is a fixed point of overfolding from which reduced down from N equal 4 to N equal 2. And there again, you have a collapsing two cycles. Along that two cycle, of course, Calor moduli is zero, but you can turn on two form B. And that difference of the two coupling parameter in two product gauge group is directly related to the two-form potential to turn on. So you see the pattern between the two, but what is varying is in Chern-Simon case is difference in the rank of the gauge group. In this case, it's a difference in the gauge coupling constant. Okay? So that's the difference. So now you see that there's a difference, but there are similarities, and this interplay between type 2A and type 2B side is what is most interesting from string theory viewpoint. So ABJM theory, I want to go very quickly. So superconformal group, we already heard, is OSP6/4R, and it has SU4 internal symmetry group, and that is a direct counterpart of SU2,2/4 with SU4 internal symmetry, R symmetry group. Gauge group, as I advertised, ABJ, the most general case, you have UM times UN, that is counterpart of UN, and the Chern-Simon level, which is coupling constant, is K and minus K, that is counterpart of the G Young Mill, more precisely one over G Young Mill square. And there's another parameter, the parity. And if when M and N are not the same, then there is a parity symmetry breaking in gauge theory side. And in that's precise the parallel of parity symmetry breaking in N equal 2 Kuiper super Young Mill theory, which is again superconformal and integrable. And the difference is again M minus N over K. Now I have not said much about the range of this B. But from this ADS5 example or ADS4 example, it is very clear that this flat potential should range between 0 and 1, and that translates to the fact that this M minus N divided by K ranges only between 0 and 1. So in other words, when you change the coupling constant between the two product gauge group is different, the maximum you can get is that basically you have maximal parity violation, which is that one, you have only one gauge group. Therefore, it's maximal parity violation. The other one is completely absent. Okay, fields. We have already seen this one. I just want to go quickly. And I have the full scale complex scalar field, Hermitian conjugate, four fermions, and complex conjugate. They are in 4 and 4 bar, unlike 6 in the N equal 4 super Young Mills case, or is Kuiper orbifold. Lagrangian, I emphasize again, there are two the Chern-Simon terms. And by the way, this Chern-Simon term is completely non-dynamical. Therefore, there is no dynamics associated with this gauge field. So all the dynamics are coming from this linear sigma model of this scalar field. And putting this one more in concrete form than previous seminar, that we have this Yukawa-like coupling between two fermion, two boson, and six fermion potential. This is very different in structure from N equal to super Young Mill. Again, K is overall coupling constant, like N equal to super Young Mill. So interaction vertices from weak coupling perturbation theory point of view, we have this sextet scalar potential and two fermion, two boson interactions, and they are very different from N equal to super Young Mill or any orbifold of it. So, in this talk, I will focus on ABJM, which is parity invariant one, but the modification to parity non-invariant one is very trivial and elementary. It's just simply just staring at the Feynman diagram again and recounting M and N factor. But there's one general rule of thumb I want to emphasize. In integrability, we are interested in the spectrum of Hamiltonian, certain dilatation operator, and that's a parity even quantity. Therefore, even if you consider ABJ theory, where you have not only lambda, the toothed coupling parameter, but also B, which is the parity violation parameter, this B dependence should come only as an even function. It cannot be absolute value also, if you do believe this parameter B enters in perturbation theory, because it has to be analytic. So there's no chance that it should be absolute value. It has to be only even functions of B. Okay? And there's also one question I'd like to provoke you. Given this one, from integrality point of view, what kind of physical observables or the quantities can you think of which is parity odd in any integral system? And generically, in many integral systems, we do not have a parity symmetry breaking, and therefore there's no observable which people have considered to the extent I am aware of. Chiral primary, that's the ground state that you can choose preferably. And in this case, as we heard already, we have this alternating scalar field configurations, and that is in terms of SU4 quantum number 4 and 4 bar alternating. Okay? Now, 4 and 4 bar, of course, contains the adjoint, and that will play a certain role. But this is in direct in contrast to the ADS5 and N equal super Young Mills case, where the ferromagnetic vacuum is the vacuum of the SO6 vector rather than spinner. Another very important point people don't realize, this one is not half BPS. It's only one-third BPS, whereas in N equal to super Young Mill, this is half BPS. The fact that this ground state preserves less than half supersymmetry surely should play some role. In particular, with no sweat, you can easily guess that there would be more quantum corrections to any excitation dynamics around this vacuum compared to N equal to super Young Mill. Okay? Now, the tool of Hamiltonian, already almost a year ago, this has been studied, and the Hamiltonian structure looks like this. I just used the standard notations of permutations and annihilation, the notations. And as we have seen already, this is alternating spin around this particular vacuum, and this spin chain has been studied very thoroughly, and Mina Anjarembo and independently Bach and myself studied the very thoroughly and in a complementary way. So the transfer matrix has been constructed, Yang-Bachstad equation has been checked, and Bethe-Anjali equation has been derived, and elementary excitation has been thoroughly studied, and also certain wrapping interactions has been studied. Okay? And by the way, the very analogous, strikingly similar Hamiltonian has already appeared in the talk by the Uber-Solaire. And any possible connection with that system will be very interesting and illuminating. Now, ABJM magnon, the excitations, is basically you start from Y1, Y4 dagger vacuum, and then you excite, and the Y1 hops into Y2 and Y3, and Y4 dagger into Y3 dagger and Y2, or it's a fermionic partner, and these are elementary single momentum carrying excitations, and they are governed, as we heard already, by PSQs 2/2 for this the white dot site and the black dot site, the same identical copies. Now, in this theory, because there is a the parity symmetry, there is a Z2, from the spin chain point of view, that's a charge conjugation, or you may call spin chain parity, in the sense that you just cut the dual lattice midpoint and the flip left and right hand side. So either viewpoint is completely fine, and that is one constraint of any excitations. The question at this point, I'd like to raise the following one. Is ABJM completely quantum integrable? Second one, is AB, given all these similarities and differences, to what extent is ABJM similar to N equals super Yang-Mell we are aware of? If it's completely the same, well, from integral point of view, it's not really that interesting. And this one, as I said, I want to again recap the differences and similarities. The N equal 4 super Yang-Mell has a 16 Q supersymmetry as well as same number of conformal symmetry. In the Chan-Simon ABJM theories, we have only 12 Q supersymmetry as well as same number of super conformal symmetry. And then interaction structure is very different, Lagrangian structure. And the quantum numbers with respect to SU4 internal R symmetry is also very different. So given all those differences, still excitations are governed by same PSU2/2 super algebra. Okay. So at this point, as I said, one of the key questions I raised is about the lattice structure in the spin chain. So I want to go through this very nice the observation by Beiser some years ago about the PSU2/2 and the excitations the constrained by that PSU2/2 super algebra. So we know that from Beiser's argument, there is a center extended PSU2/2 constrains the excitation spectrum because this is basically captures off-shell excitations of those magnons. So here I just recap the generators of SU2, two bosonic part, as well as off-diagonal the fermionic Q charge and S charge. And they are centrally extended. Of course, there's one already, which is dilatation. And then there are two K and K star that are associated with this off-shellness for each elementary and the magnons. Now, in this system, because SU2/2, I have fundamental representation like this one, and then Q acting on each component of this the fundamental representation is characterized by its function ABCD. And here we have, in general, because of nature of the supersymmetry, there are the dynamical nature of spin chain. For example, when Q act on psi, there is some creations of the background the ferrostate or background spin, or the S acting on the boson, then you delete some of the spin state. Now here G is the generating notations, which I will explain more later. Now why do I consider this one? At this point, anyone who remembers this nice argument by Beiser would notice that this is very generic, the unspecified function compared to what we have had in N equal to super Yang-Mell. Now, why do I do this? For this one, I want to motivate the following one. Remember what Hofmann and Maldacena taught us about the giant magnon. This is a strong coupling version of elementary magnon excitation. And there you consider, for example, an S2 inside S5, and you look at the semi-classical string, and string has, in Lycon frame, has this kind of profile. And there, the very crucial fact that this string configuration is in one-to-one correspondence with the elementary magnon is the identification that this azimuthal angle separation between two endpoints of the string is directly related to worldship momentum P with the coefficient 1 and linear fashion. Now the question is why? Who ordered these relations? Why is it really absolutely necessary? Now I propose that there is absolutely a viable alternative to this one by having the relation delta phi and worldship momentum, which is now new function P, capital P, which is of course some unspecified complicated function of worldship momentum P. The only constraint we would like to have is that delta phi ranges from 0 to 2 pi, or the maximum is 0 to pi. Therefore, as worldship momentum varies, this capital P again ranges from 0 to 2 pi, or pi. That's all you require. And otherwise, this function could be anything. But we have not done this one, so here I'd like to provoke all of you and go back to this question, why do I make this kind of identification? Okay? Here I'm doing so with weak coupling counterpart of it, or more or less symmetry considerations. In this case, this algebra, learned from Beiser, the closure of algebra gives this shortening conditions, BPS condition, And the central charges are related to the absorption function A, B, and C, D. And this is dilatation generator, dilatation energy. And this A, B, and C, D are related to the off-shell central charge K and K star. Now, at this point, I will focus only on asymptotic excitation. In other words, spin chain is infinitely long without paying too much attention on the boundary condition. Eventually, we have to go back and understand the finite size effect. And this is, I think, is one of the, in this consideration, one of the key questions. Anyway, so again, by usual, the Vanier functions of, on a lattice, you can construct the momentum eigenstate out of the coordinate eigenstate. And this is lattice momentum eigenstate, where phi is the usual Young-Mills or Chern-Simon word. Now, then here, the action of G on this lattice state, lattice momentum state, can be read off from the algebra I already showed you, and that is given by, in the lattice momentum case, precisely y plus minus, and this is precisely what Beiser did. Okay? And that should simply shift 1 unit of lattice from the original, the excitations. Now, on the other hand, quantum mechanically, all these generators here are subject to quantum corrections. To the extent I am aware of, even in N equal to super Young-Mill context, no one has really directly computed a quantum-corrected supersymmetric algebra Q generator as well as superconformal generator S. And it has been deduced indirectly through the dilatation operator. And that is fine, but that is not enough order to see all these possibilities of generalized momentum. And it will be very interesting. I want to pose some the future research directions for those anyone is interested. There's no direct derivation of those A, B, and C, D from supersymmetry algebra. And the operator product expansion and certain central charge relations may be used instead of indirectly deriving it. But there's certain technical ambiguities, and we could not resolve it. And I think it is a very interesting problem by itself. So because of this, and because we generally expect there's a quantum correction, especially in Chern-Simon case with the less supersymmetry, we may introduce pseudo-momentum. And for completely different motivations, yesterday we heard from Jolly's talk that the lattice structure, identification of lattice structure is a very important and imminent issue to study finite size effect. And now this capital P is kind of the kind of analog of this giant magnon generalized momentum P as a function of the Walsh lattice the lattice momentum P, which is read off in terms of the Young-Mills word. Now, that action on this excitation is given by this one looks completely parallel, but this is simply our definition of generalized momentum, capital P. Okay? But on the other hand, physically, much like a giant magnon, we expect that this capital P as a function of the lattice momentum P should be odd function. In other words, it has the same zeros, and also it should have a periodicity of 2 pi. So that those two are the constraint on the one variable function capital P of small p. So in general, from the nature of perturbation theory, we expect that e to the I capital P is given by this one. So this is a naive, the lattice momentum, but there's quantum corrections coming through, and this B2n is a, therefore a function of a coupling constant lambda, and this is basically the range of interactions and nth order in perturbation theory. So that's the structure is given here. Okay? Now, the on-shell condition has to be satisfied if it is closed one, and that's basically this one. But in terms of the lattice momentum, this being one is a very peculiar condition. So at best, this should be interpreted as some sort of twisted dynamical twisted boundary condition, and we do not yet have a complete understanding what that twisted, particular twisting corresponds to in each order in perturbation theory. So again, here we're only the asymptotic case. Now in that case, much like usual lattice momentum case, we can introduce spectral variable x plus and x minus, and everything else follows exactly the same, and the dispersion relation of energy spectrum is given by this one, looks exactly the same except this capital P is replacing the lattice momentum small p. So this one combined with the relation between lattice momentum and the generalized momentum completely specifies the spectrum in terms of the lattice momentum. Okay. Now, it is also very trivial to write down the S matrices, exactly redoing what the Beiser did, and unitarity and Yang-Bachstad equation, asymptotic Bethe-Andel equation, everything is exactly the same. Now, we know a posteriori, in any corpus super Yang-Mill, this generalized momentum, for some reason, is small p, lattice momentum. And h of lambda is related to lambda. Somebody asked the question whether this, the fact that this is monomial of lambda has anything to the S-duality. Unfortunately, it's not, because we are taking two-fifth limit, and the S-duality is not manifest in this variable. So that's not the answer. So we have here some puzzle, and some, therefore, I'd like to pose a question. Why? Why does this generalized momentum just collapse down to lattice, naive lattice momentum, even though everything you require from symmetry point of view is allowed? Second of all, given that the state of dual in any corpus super Yang-Mill, in ABJM theory, where you have lesser supersymmetry, vacuum has a less supersymmetry, then can you realize the excitation organized in terms of the pseudo momentum rather than lattice momentum? That's the question. Okay. So any questions? Okay. Then now with that insight, we now analyze the spin chain Hamiltonian. Now, because PS2/2 is the governing excitation symmetry in this system, exactly like n equals super Yang-Mill, combined with integrability, we know, we already heard that energy of single elementary magnon spectrum is governed by this one, where h of lambda is some interpolating function to fit to the supergravity, the classical string computations. Now here, this is a very general structure that we anticipate from perturbation theory viewpoint, and I understand that Christoph Sieg, the next talk, will they discuss some features about this one. So here I will just leave it as it is. Now I just expand this one, and then look at the spectrum as a function of increasing hopping in lattice structure. So this one is the usual expansion. Now if I consider pseudo momentum instead of the lattice momentum, this capital P should, this P should be replaced by the lattice momentum because we are comparing with the Yang-Mill theory world. And then this is the most general structure of that expansion. Notice that by having this generalized momentum at each ordering perturbation theory, we have less maximal terms like this one, and they intertwine with this interpolating function. So if anyone would like to understand interpolating functions from perturbation theory, they have to first address this question whether pseudo-momentum is realized in ABJM theories. So these are the spectrum. So then you can ask what kind of, given this answer, you can ask the question, what kind of spin chain Hamiltonian give rise to this spectrum? This has been already studied many years ago in n equals super Yang-Mill context. Leading order is, of course, a classical scaling dimension. It's a one-half for bosonic field. And H, the first order, H to this two-loop order, and we are the flashing here, the maximal shuffling term and the sub-leading one, I just suppress for the clarity of argument. So this is a two-side interaction. And then the fourth order, then we have five-side interaction, and of course some sub-leading ones. And then sixth order, the six-loop order, we have two operators like this one, and this one contains 1 to 7, this is a 7-site maximal shuffling interaction. And exactly the same operator structure has been studied some years ago by the Serban and Stardacher in the context of understanding this spin chain operator content from, you know, Jemsev spin chains. So for computational clarity, we will focus on this oldest maximal shuffling terms, and then do not touch at all any other lower shuffling order terms. And this one is still doable computation to all orders in perturbation theory. That's what I want to focus for the rest of my talk. So the way we compute this one is very standard. We compute just two-point function of single trace operator, with dimensional regularization, where epsilon is regularization parameter, and that is in terms of this free field, dimensional regularized free field propagator, we have new anomalous terms here appearing. Given that one, by standard rules of deriving dilatation operator, we can deduce the spin chain Hamiltonian order by order. For example, two-loop order, here we have expansion in lambda, the coupling called lambda square, lambda 4, and lambda 6, so on. And that coefficient is some the operator acting on the spin. And H2 is basically governed by this A2 operator. And H4 is a combination of A4 and A2 square, and so on. Okay? Now, this computation, of course, is very straightforward. But as you know, like in any corpus super Yang Mill, we are dealing with a conformal theory, which is renormalizable. Therefore, the renormalizability should give internal consistency check. And this is very non-trivial and strong. For example, in the H2, there is no the singular terms in this limit. The one of epsilon pole is the only one. But we know that in general, in the two loop, a four loop, like a two loop in any corpus super Yang Mill, there will be one of epsilon square term in A4 as well as A2 square. But if this theory is renormalizable, those one of epsilon square terms should cancel among themselves. And that's one consistency check. Likewise, A6 and in all this combination will have one of epsilon to the cubic term. And one, therefore, one of epsilon square and one of epsilon pole cancellation is a very strong internal consistency check. And that's very important because, as we see, some of the coefficient here appears in the lower order Hamiltonian, and the finite piece here actually enters into as a coefficient of one of epsilon poles. So if I have computed finite piece in this dilatation Hamiltonian lower order, that means I can test the renormalizability using the same coefficient, and this is the self-consistent internal consistency check. Good. So H2 is very elementary. This, of course, completely different way the Milan Zarembo and Park and myself has computed already. But using this method, we could just re-derive again. Of course, here we keep only the one of epsilon singular piece, and that coefficient agrees with the different computation that Milan Zarembo and Park and myself did in different way. Now we go to H4. And we compute a maximal shuffling term, and the diagram looks like this. This is a sextet interaction, two of them. There was only one bosonic diagram. Now, operator structure, you can analyze the operator structure by simply knowing this H2 operator structure, not just this maximal shuffling term, including all lower the terms, but just squaring that, you get operator structure of this diagram. And turned out that it's a maximal shuffling term contains indeed P15 exchange permutation term. Like I said, one of epsilon pole should cancel out because of renormalizability, and we checked that it is indeed the case, provided H2 has precisely this structure. Okay? So therefore, two-loop computation of dilatation operator is checked by looking the renormalizability property of the for loop diagram. And then finite piece, which is the dilatation operator for loop, is deduced from this maximal shuffling term. After computing this coefficient, which actually requires numerical work, and we use this MB and Amber code, which is available in the archive. And using those ones, we found this coefficient is minus one. That means E44, which I flashed some time ago, in the general structure of the spectrum is precisely minus 16. And that agrees with a prediction based on PSU2/2 and integrability. And momentum is only lattice momentum. Okay? Another check. There's, next to maximal shuffling term. In other words, the black and white dots interact, the one less in lattice side. That one, in general, could exist diagram by diagram, but here, miraculously, boson loop and fermion loop cancel with each other. Therefore, there's no such term. And this is also consistent with integrability. Now, so at this stage, just up to by for loop computation, we can conclude that between the pseudo-momentum and lattice momentum, Even though ABJM theory has lesser supersymmetry, ground state BPS vacuum has lesser supersymmetry. For some reason, which we don't completely understand yet, only lattice momentum is realized rather than generalized momentum. Okay. Now we will go to then higher orders. By the way, I want to make just one comment. The spectrum, once you know this generalized momentum function as well as the interpolating function, then your spectrum is completely determined. So those two functions are the functions we should chase after. Now, N equal 4 super Yang-Mill case, long time ago, Gross and Mikhailov and Roiban, two of the authors are here, they made a very nice computation in deriving this maximal shuffling term in the concept N equal 4 super Yang-Mill. And there, they used very clever recursion relations as well as momentum infrared regularizations. And there, this computation is completely feasible simply because there's only one kind of planar vertex which involves four bosons. And then, as you see, the number of the rungs here is the arbitrary, and once you know just one rung diagram, then you can just recursively compute the 2 and 3 and 4 and all higher ones, and you can completely resum it. And what they found is that after resummation, that it produces this the Magnon dispersion relation N equals super Yang-Mill exactly for the maximal shuffling term. And this is a very nice computation, and it checks in every detail of the renormalizability N equals super Yang-Mill theory. Now, you might say that, well, rather than doing order by order, you can do the same thing for ABJM. Sure, yes, you can do that. Let's do this one. The analysis diagram here is something like this. Okay? We have already seen in a for loop case this one. And this one, as you see, clearly you see a recursive structure. The intermediate rungs are exactly self-similar. So depending on how many rungs you have, the computation just increases only one unit of internal loop, and then you can just resum them. You can do it, and then you find that EOP has precisely the same structure that we are after in the square root structure. Now, I want to make a warning. In this case, both in the N equal 4 super Yang-Mill case, here in N equal 6, you can quickly do this one in the moment, the coordinate space regularization, but that coordinate space regularization is completely illegitimate because it's the regularization here, what you need to do is dimensional regularization, and the coordinate space propagator has a severe infrared problems. So you really have to deal with the momentum space and infrared regularization. However, in ABJM, because of sextet potential nature, you have other diagrams. Other diagrams are these forms. Okay? So these are the ones we already had that we could recursively sum. But there are other sort of what we call impurity part. And this one can be scattered around all these intermediate rungs. And you can have not only one, two, three, infinitely many. How do we sum all this one by recursion relation? That's totally impossible. And even worse, each diagram by diagram, if we try to do this regularization by the infrared momentum, that does not actually work in this case, simply because dimension is space-time dimension is different, and it does not work. So therefore, this, even though it very nicely works, the Gross, Mikhailov, and Roiban method of resuming the recursive diagrams does not work in ABJM, unfortunately. But we will find a very positive evidence for this one from the sixth loop. Here, I will go to sixth loop. Now, there are two motivations why I want to go to sixth loop. First of all, these two diagrams are precisely the lowest order diagram of the recursive one and non-recursive diagram. So this is an impurity. This is impurity. Second of all, as we already said, there are two types of operators exactly in parallel to N equals super Yang-Mill. And these those two different operators begin to appear at sixth loop order, much like in N equals super Yang-Mill case. But for some reason, in N equals super Yang-Mill, we know that only one operator contributes to the dispersion relation or energy of the Magnon. The other one does not. Very interestingly, here again, we find exactly the same pattern. We will see that this set of diagrams, which contains this impurity part, the operator itself exists. However, acting on lattice momentum state, this one vanishes identically. In other words, they don't contribute to the energy. Okay? So I emphasize again, it does not mean that this diagram is zero. It gives a non-trivial operator. But in the spectrum, they don't contribute. Okay? And the O6, this one, this is the recursive one, and that gives a non-trivial result. Okay, so five mark diagrams, again, very complicated. Here, actually, we have to use a lot of luck and a lot of fortune. Very fortuitously, Smirnov, in the last January, wrote a paper which really made a breakthrough in numerical computation for us, which was completely unavailable beforehand. And that using that method, and also very nice, the algorithm of fitting the precision computation with the integer coefficient, so-called PSLQ in Mathematica archive. With that one, we were able to compute this coefficient exactly and explicitly, and that coefficient is 128, and that again fits exactly with the lattice momentum and integral rate predictions. Okay. So that's basically all I want to say. I want to recap what we have done. So we have computed maximal shuffling terms in the Magnon dispersion relation and found it agrees with PSU2/2 superalgebra structure and integrability. And we found that in the sixth loop order, even though the operator exists, there is no 06, 6 tilde, the operator contribution to the spectrum. And we checked all this one to six loops, and we have the argument that, much like in this six loop case, all higher loop cases, that the impurity, the non-recursive impurity diagram does not contribute to the energy, even the operator exists. And I want to finally bring up some of the points that we are thinking of, and anyone who is interested, they would like to have private discussions. And again, the question is why, in general, from symmetry viewpoint, the pseudo momentum is allowed. Why that is not appearing in any corpus super Yang-Mill as well as ABJM system. Second of all, is very generic. I mean, the main focus of many talks this conference is a finite size effect in this system. And there's another question. Even though PSU2/2 appears in both N equal 4 super Yang-Mill and ABJM, in one case it's actually double and the other one is just alternating PSU2/2. So the question is, what is the elementary excitation in ABJM as opposed to N equal 4 super Yang-Mill case? And this, I think, is still needs to be understood much better. And I think it's a very interesting question to consider. And finally, the constraint on the global analytic structure on H of lambda, the interpolating function, is very important. However, by doing any perturbation expansions of this H of lambda, we will never ever get any hint. Again, I emphasize this is string theory. String theory, we want to compare the weak coupling, the spectrum, and the intra-interpolated to strong coupling at infinite order. By having one or two terms beyond the leading order, you will never ever get the analytic structure as strong coupling. You need infinitely many terms. Therefore, this one, I do not see virtue or value pursuing, even though having some finite order calculation would be very interesting. And instead, one should really think of the structure of global analytic properties of this function, and from that, one gets some constraint, and that way, we can understand the strong coupling limit and compare with the string theory. Okay, I'll stop here. Thank you for your attention.
Okay, yes.
So what kind of derivation do you expect to have for the fundamental representation for SU2/2, this ABCD coefficients?
What kind of derivation you mean?
Is that the derivation from first principles or whatever?
Okay, so here's something I think of. I mean, I can think of. So here, basically, one considers the OPE between one boson, one fermion, and what the supercharges. Then that's a three-point function. Then now you do the radiative corrections to that three-point function. And that way you can extract out this coefficient A function. And that computation is very difficult simply because this is conserved charge, and the conserved charge has many cancellations. In other words, there's always a non-linearization theorem. So to get the finite piece, you have to see many, many cancellations before. Okay? And we tried, and it's very dirty. I mean, I do not mean it's not doable, but it's something that needs to be done in a clean manner.
So, okay, about the ABCD, what you can do is you can use in N equals 4 the expressions for Q and S obtained in what I call the SU2-3 dynamic chain. Mm. And there you can apply the asymptotic beta and let's apply these guys to operators. And at some point I did it, and you just get ABCD as
yeah. The question is whether one can do systematically to high orders that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Yeah, you can do it, but I would say it's an indirect method, okay?
Well, it's just algebra, if you believe it or not. I mean,
okay, yeah.
Another comment about the non-recursive diagrams. I mean, just if you look at, if you restrict to SU2 cross SU2, it seems that the flow of charges would just eliminate those diagrams, and the recursive diagrams are fully sufficient, I would say.
That's right, yeah. But you know the computation of that. Okay. Yeah. All right. That's right.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you can show it. Then this one diagram that you showed just doesn't permit the right charges to flow from one side to the other.
And, you mean this one?
Just before this one, the one with the double arrow. It seems that at that rung you don't have the right flow of charges. So. That one would be zero.
No, but this one still contributes. This does not contribute to maximal shuffling term, but it still contributes to the lower order. Yeah.
Maybe, but...
It does. If you just look at the operator structure, it is clear that it does not contribute to maximal shuffling.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, there's a...
You need an opposite one, though. Like somewhere.
Well, there's always a conjugate one you have to add together. That's right.
Okay, and then about the capital P versus small p.
Yes.
I would think that gauge symmetry imposes this relation, that it's a trivial relation, that lattice momentum is pseudo-momentum.
What gauge relation do you have in mind?
Well, just that pseudo-momentum equals lattice momentum.
No. What gauge symmetry? You mean Young-Mills gauge symmetry?
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's sort of what inspired me to set the two equal.
No, I don't quite see that. I mean, from gauge symmetry viewpoint, you can always insert, as many Zs as you wish, or delete. Right? It's the same gauge symmetry. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, I have a question to something you said in the beginning. I didn't quite get how you could conclude that the Hamiltonian of ABJ theory would depend on B squared. Because if you go beyond the planar limit, you definitely find that it depends on B. The matrix elements depend on B, but when you diagonalize the matrix, you get that the eigenvalues depend on B squared.
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant. Okay, yeah. Not the each entry is in the Hamiltonian, but the eigenvalues is a function of B squared.
Okay, but then also I have a comment that you said that it was parity invariant, but I didn't quite get what you meant, because certainly this Hamiltonian, when you go beyond the planar limit, it doesn't commute with parity.
Oh, no. What I meant is that there's always parity even in odd state.
Yes.
Okay, but each of them are parity, definite parity state.
Not when you go beyond the planar limit.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. Yeah, I'm talking about the planar limit. Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's right.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay. If not, let's thank Su Jung again.